Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Meadors. Live here at First String Sports, a little bit of hiccup at the beginning. Thank you guys for joining us, as always, every Saturday from 10 to 12 here on Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. That's First String Sports. I do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room, and I love doing my show from this room. It's awesome. It's the only place where you can get your Letterman's Jacket. I get here pretty early when the store opens up at 9 a.m., have a fun conversation with the guys. We talk about high school sports, of course. And, you know, we see people getting their Letterman's jackets configured and getting their patches on and design how they want to. So, yeah, this is the only place to do it. And, guys, it's December, right? Christmas will be upon us before you know it. Christmas break for all of us educators. We're looking forward to that. First String Sports looks festive, man. I see Christmas lights up. See little, 6-inch Christmas tree, too. So come on down here, First String Sports. It's a beautiful, beautiful Saturday morning so far. It's going to be a beautiful Saturday. It's going to be a great weekend. Really looking forward to it. All right, for the next 2 hours, guys, we're going to be talking about high school sports and a little bit about Fresno State as well. The news of Coach Jeff Tedford of Fresno State had to step away for the bowl game. Unfortunately, he's not stepping down from the program at all. A lot of people thought that when it was announced on Twitter, but he's stepping away temporarily due to health reasons. So obviously we wish him the best. He's a Fresno State icon, and he stepped down and earlier 2019, and he came back, and obviously the last part of the Fresno State football season hasn't worked out as well as anybody had hoped. A little bit of a tailspin. We've still got the bowl game. I think tomorrow we find out who Fresno State is going to be playing in that bowl game. So, yeah, we'll be talking about that periodically through the next 2 hours. All right, so what's on the show today? After the break, we'll be talking with Mitch Stevens. He is part of the SB Live Network. He's also the prep editor for the San Francisco Chronicle, been doing this for a long time. He's my editor, too. I do writings for SB Live rankings and previews. So Mitch was at the De La Salle and Clovis North football game. You've probably heard by now how that went down. Clovis North with that great season, 13-0. De La Salle, that storied program. They had two losses on the year. So was this, a lot of questions. Was this one of the great De La Salle teams that they've had in the past? No, it probably isn't, right? They have two losses. They had an incredible 151-game winning streak. A lot of talk, though, too, guys, about the home game. Should Clovis North have got a home game at Veterans Memorial Stadium, 13-0? Did they deserve it? Absolutely. Were they ranked higher in every poll? They were. They were. But one of the complications is at the state level, CIF, they don't like to send teams on the road for back-to-back years. That's one of the stipulations. And De La Salle was on the road last year. It was at Folsom. Was it really on the road? Yeah, they didn't play at a home stadium. Was it a very far trip? Nope. They play Folsom a lot. They've played them five out of the last 13 months, which is wild. But anyway, Clovis North, it was a terrible time to have their worst game of the football year. And it was a terrible time for De La Salle to play their best football game of the year. And they did. It was 33-0 at half. Ended up being 41-0 in a running clock. They just couldn't get it going. We'll be talking with Mitch about that, talking with Gabe about that, talking with Scott Bemis, who's coming on at the top of hour number two. Scott is a friend of the show. He hasn't been on this year. He's coming into First String Sports. We'll be talking about that game that he was at. Sure, he got home super late, as did Mitch. And talk about Fresno State, talking about high school football in general with Scott. And then, actually, I need to slip in Kenny Palinelli in there. He's coming on before hour number two, so after Mitch. And Kenny's a friend of the show as well. He had a great year at Madera, 8-4 this season. We're going to be wrapping up the year. What worked, what didn't work, especially in the playoffs, what needs to be tweaked. How tight can playoff games be? Just thinking about Clovis North, things are going to go their way. They had a fumble in that game. They're not used to fumbling the football. De La Salle was more physical. So when you're going against one of those types of teams, and when things aren't going your way in a playoff, how are you able to adjust? So really looking forward to talk to Coach Palinelli just about a lot of things pertaining to high school sports. At the bottom of hour number two, of course, Gabe Camarillo is coming on, producing the show. You guys know him from Home Field Advantage. Does a fantastic job. So lots of stuff to talk about. You know, Fresno State, high school football. Yeah, high school basketball. How about that? High school basketball is here. It's upon us. Clovis West girls had that showcase going on. They got some great games tonight. Clovis West tournament for boys is next week. The Clovis North tournament's going on. Bullard and the host Broncos are in the championship game. Yeah, so that's Tim Admonson against Tony Admonson for like the 100th time. So that's going on. So, yeah, we're going to be transitioning to basketball very, very soon. Very, very soon. I want to give a little shout-out. I don't do this very often, but my brother's birthday is today. And he's my only sibling, and he's younger than me, and he's got himself a Valley Championship in baseball. I mean, he's a really good athlete, City County, all that stuff. But happy birthday to my brother. He is actually the creator of the new CAF Central Section logo. So you see that new logo that was created when Ryan Toss took over as Central Section Commissioner. It's got the mountains. It's got that little river. It's got the sunset. Yeah, so that was designed by my brother. So every time I see that, I'm like, cool, man. That's he just did a really good job of that. So happy birthday to Andy Metters, my only brother. Did a great job with that. All right. So we mentioned the Clovis North game a little bit. Again, it was just a perfect storm of everything that could go wrong for the Broncos. But that doesn't diminish the incredible season that they had. 13-0, obviously an undefeated track season. Had to beat Central to win the track. And then he steamrolled through the playoffs. Actually, I shouldn't say steamrolled. Steamrolled for the first game and three quarters. Clovis East made a great comeback in the semifinal. And then they took care of business against Central. Ranked pretty high in the state. They'll probably end up maybe about 11th or 13th, according to most polls. But remarkable. Coach Mike Jaycott, who was on the show last week, did an incredible job. That team was left for dead a few years ago during the COVID season. Resurrected, man. Resurrected the program. Those kids were bought in. They deserve all the flowers. You know, McKay Madsen, Jackson Sinfell. Those guys are dudes. Mario Cosma, the quarterback. The defense was spot on. But, again, when you play against a Sarah or a De La Salle, I mean, we're not even mentioning St. John Bosco modern day because those guys are even in a league of their own compared to California schools. You know, when you go against those type of schools, it's tough. A lot of breaks have to go your way, and they just didn't last night. And, you know, they were more physical. Talking about De La Salle, which surprised me. I watched the game on my phone. They were more physical. So looking forward to hear Mitch's perspective after the break. I want to mention a couple other schools. So there were three Central Section state playoff games last night, and there are three more today. Wasco, how about those Tigers? They're advancing to the D6 AA final against St. Vincent de Paul after beating Cerritos 7-6. Low scoring in that one, so congrats to them. That will be played next weekend. And Torres fell 41-14 in the Division IV AA game to Jarupa Hills in that one. All right, so tonight what's happening? Well, Division IIA, the big one, Simi Valley, they're 9-4 at Central Valley Christian, 13-1. At 6 o'clock, I'll be there. I'm going to take the drive and check it out anytime I get a chance to see Bryson Donaldson before he continues his career at Fresno State. I'm going to check that out for darn sure. So Simi Valley, Central Valley Christian tonight in Visalia. And D4A, Rio Hondo Prep, they are 13-1 at Mission Oak, 9-5. Hats off to Tulare County because Strathmore, we'll get to that in a second, is also in the state playoffs. 13-1 team, yeah, they're on the road. So how about that? Like Clovis North, heard a lot of different opinions on social media about that. We're getting into that a tiny bit. But, yeah, how about Rio Hondo Prep? And they got a great pedigree. And they're going on a road to Mission Prep. You guys know what Rio Hondo's Prep, what their quote-unquote mascot is? They actually don't have a mascot. It is the Cares, spelled with a K, K-A-R-E-S. And on their website, I went and checked that out. I'm like, what the heck is a care? I don't know if it was like some weird exotic animal. But it's described as not a mascot, but a way of life. Cares with a K, a way of life. So they're a faith-based school. Founded, I think, in the 1960s, but they got it going on, man. They got a lot of CIF championships. Well, but yeah, interesting fun fact that cares. All right, so the other game that's happening in the Central Section in Tulare County, Division 7A, Lincoln of San Francisco is playing at Strathmore. Lincoln is 9-3, Strathmore 10-4. I bet it's going to be a little bit of a culture shock for that team from San Francisco in the city. It's a city school. And driving to Strathmore, they're going to be driving like, where the heck is Strathmore? We're playing literally in the middle of nowhere. 3,000 people in the town of Strathmore. Jeremy Blackwell, who's on the show last week, just an incredible story with that guy. And now, guys, guess what? They got two stoplights in Strathmore. Crazy, huh? So we're really looking forward to that one. Good luck to the Spartans. And like I said, basketball is here. Gabe and I are going to be broadcasting a couple games, I believe, next week on the radio at the Clovis West tournament, maybe Bullard and, of course, Clovis West, and then the championship game in that one. Boys are looking really strong. They're off to a 5-0 start. The girls, like I mentioned, Clovis West, they're the team to beat again, 11 straight Central Section titles. Their little showcase, I shouldn't say little, why did I use that word? It's a huge showcase that's going on right now. Tonight, some really, really good matchup. Shaquille O'Neal's daughter, I watched her play the last two games, 6'4", great shooting form. She is an absolute beast. She's here. Clovis West came back, 153-43 last night against the state champion from Arizona. They were down 11 at half, 27-16, is that 11? Yeah, 11, and came back. And, with that great defense that they're known for. All right, so after the break, we're going to be talking with Mitch Stevens about that De La Salle and Clovis North game. He was there in person. He's going to give us a great perspective. You're listening to 1430 ESPN.
Listen to the Los Angeles Lakers on your local sports leader, 1430 ESPN.
Welcome back on this lovely Saturday morning. I want to mention Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating. Thank you to those guys for helping sponsor the show and 1430 ESPN as well. What do we got? About 62 degrees right now. Let me double check. In Fresno, looking at my computer. My computer's way off. What is it saying? 62. 51 degrees according to my iPhone and a high of 61. There it is. High of 61 today. A little bit cloudy. 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, sun's going to be out there, but a little bit cloudy. So thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring the show. All right, talked a little bit about that Clovis North and De La Salle game last night. I'm going to bring on Mitch Stevens right now. He is the California editor of SB Live, high school preps editor for the San Francisco Chronicle since 2002. Man, he's my editor for SB Live. He reads my stuff and makes me look a lot smarter than I actually am. He was at the game last night and has a great perspective of teams up and down the state, how everything works. So, Mitch, last night was an absolutely huge night for high school football up and down the state. You're charged of a lot of content. You're up late. How late was your night last night?
Oh, it wasn't late. It was early. It was 4 o'clock when I went to bed. But the previous week was 8 a.m, so it was an improvement. I got more streamlined and I figured out what to do. But yeah, there are less games. So, this isn't exactly work. This is it's a labor of love, as you well know, and. By the way, I don't have to edit your copy at all. You're clean as can be, and it's a pleasure to read all your copy.
Oh, thanks, Mitch. I appreciate you very much. And, you mentioned how sometimes it doesn't feel like a job. You just love what you do and staying up till 4 a.m. and then 8 a.m. like you did the week before. Like on a typical night like this, and then when you're covering section, when you're, getting in content for all the section championships all around the state, like, What's your MO? Are you on your phone? Do you get home at a certain time on your computer and you just, all these things are emailed to you or shared on Google Docs and you just got an eye on everything up and down the state? Is that how it works for you?
It's a wild ride. My older years, I was always out at games and so forth. That's what I love to do, to be honest, and meet people, see it, feel it. Honestly, I've had to many nights stay here on the NFHS network and watch games. Yeah, and of course, Twitter is a blessing and a curse, but it's a blessing in this regard, certainly, to kind of track down results. And you know, I have very trusted sources. You know, gentlemen like yourself and Gabe. I mean, honestly, I was just telling Gabe in the central section there, he's a go-to guy. You guys are. So those are all the ways. So I'm certainly no expert. I'm just, I don't want to call myself an aggregator. I really don't. That's just not what I want to do. I want to be a writer. But so last night it was lucky. You know, the games are, there's a lot less games now, so it's easier to track. So it actually wasn't that difficult last night.
Yeah, very true. And let's talk about last night. So, De La Salle, Clovis North. Clovis North, we've obviously been watching them for the entire season. I believe we were able to broadcast four of their games, or at least go to four. I think they had a Thursday game I was able to go to and watch firsthand. But, you know, all year, Mitch, they've run the football, and it's worked. And the formula worked all year for 13 games. Run the football, take care of the football, play solid defense, work that clock, limited possessions. It's worked all season. They got that D1 Central Section Championship, which is going to live forever. However, on the other end, when you're matched up with a school like De La Salle, who I wrote, and a lot of people thought, you know, very similar styles, so to speak, run the football, but their formations and the way they ran, I could tell, let's just say, after the second drive, when De La Salle went up, because they got a two-point conversion, I believe, 14-0 after a three and out by Clovis North, I'm like, oh, this could be a long night for the Broncos. So from your perspective, you know, was it just a case of Clovis North playing their worst game of the year and De La Salle going on record and saying that was their best game of the season, just a perfect nightmare for Clovis North, so to speak?
Yeah, no, it was definitely, I've seen a lot of De La Salle this year. I've seen them in my entire career. It was the first, when I had a beat with the Contra Costa Times in 1984, and it was De La Salle, and that's when they really kind of started going. So I've seen them for years. This is, you know, this is not their powerhouse. This is not their juggernaut. But last night they were. They brought back time, and though, you know, normally they have, breakaway stuff. They had one breakaway touchdown, but last night they got off the ball. You know, I didn't even write about it, and honestly, but you know, they did have an extra week, and they did look fresher. And they just got off the ball better than they have all year long. They actually went a little harder on their beer. They've kind of gotten away from that. And it was a perfect storm. It was the styles we knew going in. It was going to be a fast game, but De La Salle was the one that was able to. You know, they just go 3 or 4 yards. They didn't have big long runs, but. De La Salle's defense was the thing that surprised me most, and that they actually held down Clovis North. So, I don't know if it was their worst game of the year. It wasn't like Clovis North was fumbling. I guess they had one turnover, maybe two. But, it was just the perfect storm for De La Salle. It was a shame because I think everybody was expecting a closer game in Clovis North. They brought their fans. It was, you know, they did everything, and I felt bad for them for sure. They've had such a great season to end like that.
We're talking with Mitch Stevens, editor at SB Live. You said it right. I think it was a perfect storm for a bad night for Clovis North. And you mentioned De La Salle's defense, and watching that game online, you know, I don't think Clovis North has ever been tackled in the backfield or hit in the backfield as much as they were last night as well. I felt like the D-line just overpowered Clovis North's line. You know, did you feel after the game, too, that De La Salle was a little bit surprised even with their own performance?
Oh, they definitely – they're surprised, but they – To a man, you know, I asked every one of them, that's your A game? And to a man, they all said yes, no question. And They lost their defensive line coach, who passed away in the middle of the season. And I will say that they, not to get too spiritual here, but they are definitely playing for this coach. His name is Steve Jacoby, very popular figure. You know, football coaches, tough. This Steve Jacoby is just a wonderful, upbeat, jovial kind of guy. And they all love him. I mean, I asked each of the defensive players. Again, that's part of the perfect storm. It was their best night, and Clovis North. I think the LSL would beat a lot, many teams, and convincingly. You know, they've done that to many teams over the years. When I watched Clovis North, I saw them several times on NFHS. The word stranglehold was just comes right to the forefront. They just it's a vice grip, and they just, but literally De La Salle beat them at their own game. That's been De La Salle's game for 40 years, let's face it, and they've been in big games. The coaches, I'm not saying they were out coached or anything like that, but they've been there so long. I think Clovis North maybe felt they had to play a perfect game. That gets into it when you play De La Salle. It's just like, it's a big deal. And might have played into it. The coaches weren't very chatty afterwards. I felt for them. It's not how they wanted to end it, for sure. But, they got, like you said, they got that section championship they'll always cherish.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been a wonderful opportunity to watch those Broncos play at various times, and follow them on Twitter, and then check out their stats on Max Preps. You're like, oh yeah, there's Jackson's info with another 68-yard run, and McGabe Madsen with three more touchdowns, and that game that Madsen had in the Central Section Championship game against Central was something to remember. Those three touchdown runs were incredible. So lots and lots and lots of positives obviously to come down, for Clovis North this season. I want to ask you too, Mitch, I'm curious about the chatter up north, right? Obviously I'm very close to the chatter down here in the Central Section about how the state playoffs are allocated and where teams are able to play. So, Clovis North 13-0, did they deserve a home game? I've gone on record and said, yeah, they do, right? It makes sense. The Central Section champion is undefeated. Obviously, we have Liberty that's won a state championship last year from our section, and, that great run that Central Grizzlies had, that state championship as well. I think some people are just confused how that works. Maybe even some coaches are a little confused. Why didn't we get a home game? Well, why is this team going on the road? So the best that coming from, all your years following high school sports to where it's come now with all these state playoff games, what's your best understanding on how the CIF, where they send teams?
Yeah, I talked with Ron McKay this week, and I saw Brian Seymour out at the game, and we chatted about all that. I have over the years, for many years. I mean, it's not an exact science, and it never really said. They kind of weigh things, and the main thing is these teams that play year in and year out. if they were away one year, they're home the next. And that was the case with De La Salle this time. I didn't really ask them, but Clovis North is a new team to it. So you put them on the road for that. They try to even up the sections and make sure, that not all from one section. Central, I think he said that there were three home, three away. Was that right?
Yeah.
With the Central?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they try to do that. They're trying to balance everything. Honestly, these people, they're all former coaches and administrators. There's nothing, evil about any of them. They're just trying. I think they're super conscientious. And Clovis North on the facility they got, everybody knows it's one of those. All the facilities down there are so great and accommodate a lot, but they really just try to even it up. But the whole system, obviously, is just, it's anybody looking from the outside, it's whack. It's a bowl system. It's not, you know, they put the word bowl in there for a reason. The state you want to ever look at how to do it is Texas, and they do it right, and they play, there's 6-7 weeks of playoffs, and it's a true, tournament, and that's the way to do it, but you just can't do it in California, because it's a federation, and it's just not one place rules, there's 10 different sections, and they all have their wants and needs, and they, it's all about the principals who make decisions, and then they just abide by them. They follow the rules and try to police them, basically, is what CIF's role is. But they're really all really good people. They really are. I mean, my job is to kind of uncover, the bad stuff, and honestly, there's nothing, to find here that's kind of underhanded or they favor something over the other. I mean, there's probably built-in things anywhere. I mean, De La Salle has been, they'll be going to the state championship 16 out of 17 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been there forever. And they obviously have relationships with those people more than maybe Clovis North, but I don't think that means they were unfair.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a great point. So, Central, I think, there's been some state champions in the past with, with Strathmore and, Washington Union had that great team. I think it was 2011 that won a state championship. But, I think when this, that it was still fairly new, the state. Uh-huh. And I love how you said the state bowl games as well. Obviously, they're state champions if they win it. But the state bowl game, I need to think of that more often. That's a great way to phrase it to make sure we understand that that's how it works and not a tournament. But, Central, that great run that they had. And then with Liberty, obviously, they're from Bakersfield, but they're still Central section teams. I think that goes a long way, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think in the Central when I took this job, I was with Max Preps for 15 years, and then I took this job at SB Live, and I kind of had the opportunity. And I was a national, which is just all these concepts are crazy. trying to cover something nationally is kind of a funny concept, to be honest. I come from a community newspapers that you know well about, and digging your teeth in. So trying to dig your teeth into a nation or even California is hard. And honestly, with Max Preps, I covered a lot of the state, but the Central section was the one I was the most curious about. I really hadn't spent a lot of time. And, it's classic. It's a Central section. It's Central California. It's the middle child. And they're asked to go both directions. I can see where that is people are, not super comfortable with that. And it seems like, they're not like they are a stepchild. And I don't think it's obviously true. I enjoy every game that I have watched in the Central section. I think it's great history. Obviously, all these things. That's why I sought you out and Gabe. It's difficult. I feel bad. They are. Three of them are going to the South and three to the North, or four, two. It's an odd situation for sure.
No, yeah, I 100% agree. And I feel like there are a lot of champions here in the Central section,
sure,
championing the kids. And, we're different. We got our rural schools. We got our fireballs, with Josh Allen. I mean, who the heck knew that one of the best, and he is probably, he's playing lights out the last couple of weeks, Josh Allen from Tiny Fireball. It's just a great story, and we're homegrown kids. We're hardworking kids here from the Valley.
Yep.
And, the identity, we know who we are, right? The Central section is strong in who we are, but the identity up and down the state is lost a lot, I believe, because we are thrown north and thrown south in the playoffs for basketball too. It's just the scenario that, I don't think there's a victim mentality that we have right. here. However, we need to right. stand up for ourselves sometimes as well, right? I think that's why you saw a lot of blowback about Clovis yeah. North getting that away game.
Yeah, you know, I really was thinking about that when I went out there, and I was trying to think about why that result happened, and I'm not going to say that Clovis, they were distracted, but, you know, certainly, you know, I wrote about it in the lead, I didn't ask kids about it too much, but I read some quotes somewhere else where, you know, the big 30-foot, you know, Bronco blow-up thing, and bringing their band, you know, I know why they did it. You know, they want to make it feel like a home game, but I'm not saying I've read a couple quotes where the kids kind of did resent it from De La Salle. I don't think they should have personally, but they just felt a little tight, like they were, like they had a chip, but they just didn't seem very relaxed. Not that you know, football, you're ever relaxed, but it just felt a little tense. And, you know, if they were distracted by that and kind of feeling like they should have had the home game. And I don't know that the kids were really into that or not, or it's more just people probably. But, so there's that.
I know. And, you know, obviously we love our teams here in the Central Section. There should be no doubt about that. And, Mitch, it's been a pleasure over the last couple of years to get to know you. And, you have a great perspective, right? Sometimes we get it, you know, people get a little narrow-minded at times, but you have a great perspective on everything that counts in high school sports and what matters the most. And, you know, your long-form stories that you've been able to write in the past are the stuff that high school sports is really about, in my opinion. And, you know, the stories and, you know, the adversity the kids go through. And you mentioned the defensive line coach for De La Salle that passed away suddenly and how the kids are playing for them. I mean, that's just special, special stuff. And I'm happy to partner with you a little bit on a scale on SB Live in that journey together. So thanks, Mitch, my friend, for coming on. I really appreciate you.
You're welcome, and man, it is our benefit and pleasure, believe me, to get your perspective, Paul. Really, not just blowing stuff at you. You're fantastic, and thanks so much for having me. And anytime, yep.
You bet. Make sure you guys check out SB Live. They do an incredible job with rankings and game recaps and videos and all that great stuff that makes high school sports great. All right, that was Mitch Stevens. Really, really a joy to talk to. All right, coming up after the break, we have Kenny Palinelli, head coach of Madera. Hey, what's life like as a head football coach now that the season is over? What's he going to do with his time? Does the season ever, ever stop? And get his perspective about the playoffs, what works, what doesn't, here on 1430 ESPN.
March Madness on locally owned 1430 ESPN.
Good conversation with Mitch Stevens. He has a great perspective, like I said. Be honest, right? He is he knows De La Salle very well. He's been up in that Concord area for a long time. He knows the coaches, he knows the landscape, he knows what's going on. So he has a great perspective though up and down the state. Really good conversation with Mitch. If you guys miss any part of the show or miss past shows you want to go back and listen to, you could go to 1430ESPNFresno.com, go to podcasts, check out my show right there. It's really cool. You click on that, and then, you could skip the commercials, and you could play whatever you want to play. Let's say if you just want to listen to one interview, boom, you could find that interview and play it. Also, Gabe's show, Home Field Advantage, Jose Gonzalez's show, Bulldog Hour with Tony D as well. It's all right there. All right. Let's talk with Coach Palinelli. Head coach of Madera had a really good season this year. Fun to watch them in a couple games. That great playoff win against Bakersfield Christian, and then ran into a tough Centennial team. But, Kenny, what's going on this morning, my friend? Good to talk to you.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, so, I mean, what's life been like for the last couple weeks for you? Are you staying at home as much as possible? Are you going and checking out games? Are you watching games online? So did you watch any Central Section games the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I watched a few, but mostly just at home. I haven't been to any games. Trying to spend as much time with my daughter. My daughter's 1.5 now, so, you know, during football season it's hectic, and you get home and you basically get to put her asleep, and then, you know, I'm gone the next morning when she wakes up, so just trying to spend as much time as possible with her and the wife.
That's perfect. And then obviously the Christmas spirit is already upon us, and Thanksgiving's in the past. When do you guys do a huge, like, the, you know, you mentioned you got a 1.5-year-old daughter, and I mean, does your wife decorate the house in, with Christmas stuff? Like, when does that transition happen? Like, it's happening sooner and sooner. I see Christmas decorations up before Thanksgiving now. That used to be taboo. So what's it like in your house?
Yeah, that's my wife. The moment it hits November, she's like, let's get the Christmas tree up. Like, basically, as soon as our season ended, she was like, that first weekend we had together, she was like, it's Christmas. Let's start decorating. So, yeah, we've had the tree up already. We had the tree up for Thanksgiving. We hosted here with some family. So, yeah, it's been my wife is definitely an early Christmas person.
Do you know where all the Christmas stuff is, or are you frantically looking for it in the garage or your storage shed? Man, where the heck are these lights? Or I got to get these decorations out. Do you know, you have everything out? Do you know where it's at?
Yeah, I try to keep my little storage container organized, so I have all the Christmas stuff on one side. So I just pull out all the boxes, and then I bring them in the house, and then I put the tree up, and she decorates it. So it's a pretty good – we got a pretty good little strategy going for it. So
yeah, you got that synergy going. That's awesome. You know, I had a – you know, talking about Clovis North a little bit, and we know the success that they've had this year, 13-0 on the season, and everything just really worked out for them all year. The game plan was executed. They didn't have a lot of adversity in games. I don't think they were down all year in double digits. But, you know, when it gets to the playoff times, even, you know, the Central Section playoff time, you know, when things go off script, so to speak, and I want to get your perspective on this, when you're like, hey, all of a sudden you find yourself down 14-0 and maybe you fumbled on a punt or you fumbled on your first possession. You're like, okay, things are starting to go crazy. From your perspective as a coach, is that like a helpless feeling for you? Do you just have to try to gather your coaching staff and figure out what to do? Do you have to calm down the kids? What's kind of your strategy when things are going a little sideways, especially in a playoff game?
I mean, for me, I mean, I think we encountered that with Centennial. I mean, right off the bat, they returned the opening kickoff on us. And I think when you get in that scenario, at least for me, I try to talk to the coaches and just say, you know, like, what is something that our kids are confident in that we can get their confidence back? You know what I'm saying? It's like, let's go to our go-to plays that we know our kids can execute at a high level and kind of try to get some confidence back. And I feel like that's kind of where I always go to in that scenario, just because I want the kids to feel comfortable and start to get some of that confidence back and, you know, remind themselves that, hey, we can't play with these guys if we execute.
Or how about from your perspective when the other team is playing lights out? You're like, oh, man, that other team's pretty motivated. Like, same type of deal, trying to talk to your kids, trying to talk to your coaching staff. Like, hey, guys, it's time to play real, real big boy football right now.
Yeah, I mean, that happens quite a bit, you know. Like, even when in our game against Sanger this year, you know, they're playing well, they're a machine. When they get rolling, you know, they're tough to stop. So, you know, when you get in those scenarios, that's what I say, you just got to battle, you know. You got to try to make sure that you can, you know, you try to win each play and don't think about it as like a whole. You know what I mean? I try to break the game down into like, hey, let's win each play, or we can win the next play. Because all it takes is one punch out. You know, a team could have a 10-play drive, and then you punch the ball out on the 11th play, and that doesn't look like a great drive anymore because, you know, you created the turnover and got momentum. So I think if you just play the next play and try to keep that mindset, you'd be more successful.
Yeah, and you had that great win against Bakersfield Christian, like I mentioned. And now that you've had a little bit more time to reflect and see how the whole playoff system played out and worked out, what worked in the playoffs? I can't remember. Were you the 10 seed this year?
We're the 11th seed.
11th seed in D2. Okay. And you think about, like, Justin Garza was the 15th seed, and so they were on the, you know, D3, D2, right on the border right there. So you know, I have some time to think about it. What works and what might need to be tweaked in years to come with the playoff system?
I mean, it's hard to say. It's hard to say what works because, you know, we're only in year two, and I haven't seen – I don't know. I wasn't very happy with, you know, the way things turned out this year. I mean, it's just kind of weird. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You know, last year we're the 14th seed in D4, and this year we're the 11th seed in D2. And I know things change from year to year, but I think there has to be a happy medium on, you know, where you go. I think both, you know, even looking at teams like, you know, us and Garza, it's very difficult. Even a team like Hanford, I mean, I think that they should have been a D2 team. You know, and they get thrown into D1, and it's not very fun for those guys to have to go on the road and play a Division I track school. And I think the biggest difference between, you know, when you jump up a level, it's like us going to play Centennial. You know, you jump up a level, and there's just so much more depth for those teams. You know, I think, you know, all my best players have to play both ways, whereas they can kind of, you know, they'll play – they have a defensive line and an offensive line, and that makes a huge difference as you get down into, you know, November games when, you know, the games start piling up on players' legs and that kind of stuff. So I don't really know what has worked. I think it's something that we still need to iron out. I know a lot of the coaches that I'm friends with and I've talked to aren't very happy with the playoff system. So I think, you know, there's some tweaking that still needs to be done.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there's never a perfect system. Maybe March Madness with basketball, right? You don't hear a lot of complaints about that. But, yeah, I mean, even the college ranks, right? There's always tweaking things. And yeah, there's lots to discuss. And, you know, I know that the board of managers at the CIF office, they're, you know, they get a lot of flack for different things, and they're trying to figure it out, too, in competitive equity. I mean, there's just tons and tons of factors. But I like that you mentioned Hanford coach, you know, they were kind of stuck right there, and they're, you know, D2 team that you think about. But I think most people don't realize that Hanford's got about 1,500 kids, and, you know, with the additions of the new high schools, Hanford West and Sierra Pacific, and then you think about Sanger, you know, they're the Apaches, and that was just – it's just a strong one-school town for a long time, and now they got Sanger West, and you've seen it. You know, you're a Madera native and graduate of the school, but you've seen it with your own eyes with now Matilda Torres and Madera South. So, you know, when towns like that and cities with an identity in the past, new schools are added, does that make it more difficult? Does the town become divided where maybe you're fighting for players and then youth leagues are kind of a mess? Is it, you know, is it just kind of tough to see sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like what I touched on my last little rant I went on. It's just, I think, it you know, the talent is there in Madera for sure, you know. But, you know, when you start opening new schools, now the talent is dispersed. And so you lose depth, really, right? And so whereas, you know, back when I was in high school, you know, we had platoon. We could play an offense and a defense, and we'd have all of our best players, you know, the really, really, like, studs would play both ways. And then everyone else was fresh. Our defensive line was fresh because they only played defensive line. And then our offensive line guys would jump on, and they're fresh because they don't have to play D-line, whereas, like, all three of my defensive linemen this year started on the O-line and played every single snap of every single game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's the biggest thing. And then you know, like you talked about the youth, and it kind of splits the town as far as that goes. And then, you know, it makes it harder to fundraise because now there's three different schools all pulling from the same money pool in the town. And so, yeah, I think it creates some problems.
Yeah, we're talking with Coach Kenny Palinelli of Madera High. We've got a couple minutes here, Coach. Always love talking with you and getting your perspective. You know, you mentioned you're playing today, and, you know, you did say you could go only, you know, play one side of the football, but I know you played quarterback, you kicked, You played on the D line, I believe. You played running back. You played it all. So, you were a Swiss Army knife down there in your playing days. But I want to ask you, I believe you graduated in 2007. But, you know, how has high school football changed now that you've, you know, your playing days weren't that far gone, and now you've been the head coach at Madera for a few years? How has high school football changed, in your opinion?
Well, I think the biggest, probably, like, I think the product overall is pretty dang good. I think, you know, kids are becoming more skilled these days because there's more opportunities to play. Like, there wasn't 7-on-7 stuff back when I was a kid. You know, I would have loved to run around and throw. Like, we did team 7-on-7s, but now there's these, you know, private teams that travel all around the country, and that would have been fun to do when I was a kid. But I think the kids are more skilled, you know, obviously just with the advances in training and weightlifting and all that kind of stuff. You know, my senior year was like at the beginning of this stuff. Like, you know, I thought Coach Blankenship, who, you know, just finished his 50th season, he retired this year. So shout out to Coach B. You know, I'm proud to play for that guy. But, you know, we were really big in the weight room and that kind of stuff. And so I think that's what kind of helped change the culture of Madera, is like when he brought in the weight room and really had our guys lifting. And, you know, I'm kind of cut from the same cloth in that regard, is, you know, we put a big emphasis on the weight room for our kids. And I think, you know, it shows in the product on the field. You look at teams like Clovis North and all those track schools. I mean, those kids are huge, and they're super talented kids everywhere. I think, you know, now more than ever, we have so many talented kids getting recruited in the Valley. So I think that has definitely increased just with all the resources that we have now and all the training and all the specialization. And, but, you know, in a sense too, like, football is very different from when I played. You know, you could throw crackback blocks and hit people in the helmet and that kind of stuff. So it's definitely not as physical as brand of football, but I definitely think it's more skilled for sure.
I agree. All great stuff. Love catching up with you, Coach. And have a great Christmas time. I can just imagine your house and how festive it looks and all the lights. So enjoy your vacation and your daughter. I really appreciate you, as always.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on. And you guys have a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And we're looking forward to next season, so I'm sure we'll be chatting.
Absolutely. Can't wait. All right. Good stuff, my friend. All right. Coming up after the break, hour number two. That hour just absolutely flew by. We got Scott Bemis in the house, live at First String Sports. Can't wait to talk to him about a ton of stuff, a plethora of stuff on the docket on 1430 ESPN. Paul Metters live here at First String Sports. You guys know where First String Sports is, right? Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. I do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room. It's the place to be. They don't have Letterman's Jackets, of course. They got everything sports-related. Baseball. Hey, baseball's going to be here before you know it. I know we just got into December, but, hey, spring will be here in a few months. Baseball will ramp up. Softball. You know, I'm looking at chairs with Clovis and Clovis North on the back at Fresno State right there as well. So hour number one was great. I had great conversations with Mitch Stevens and Coach Kenny Palinelli of Madera. Now time to bring in Scott Bemis, sports anchor for KC24 and CBS 47. Play-by-play voice, also at Fresno City College Football on 940 AM, KYNO. Friend of the show, Scott Bemis. I love talking with Scott, seeing him on the sidelines. Does a fantastic job. Scott, you know, a little bit of technical difficulties. You and I are going to have to share a microphone here. But, hey, we rolled with the punches, MacGyvering things a little bit. But we're talking a little bit off-air, Scott, about, you know, crazy moments in broadcasting, right? I mean, and you're just like, Paul, we'll get through this. We'll just run through it, because you've seen it all, haven't you?
Yeah, it's whatever could go wrong does seem to go wrong sometimes when you're relying on technology, right? And I mean, this day and age, the worst thing that happens, right, is when the internet goes down.
Yeah,
the internet goes down for everybody, right? You're in trouble, especially a fully functioning newsroom. But yeah, we've had several instances over there at the station where you know, everything just goes down. Like our control room, there's some kind of issue, right? And the engineers are trying to repower the whole thing and get it going. So we lose all video and all graphics. The cameras sometimes are still working. And so they still put a newscast on the air, and we still put a newscast on the air. And it's at those moments, those fire drill moments, it's funny, Paul, because I think people realize how valuable sports people are and weather people are in those moments, because weather people and sports people, especially weather, but are ad-libbers, right? And yeah. they kind of can go there and can just keep talking for hours. The AJ Fox of the world, who's terrific at doing that. And so, you know, we go out there and we just turn it into a sports talk radio show for 5 or 6 minutes during our newscast.
And you only get a few minutes sometimes every night talking about sports. So whenever you come on the radio, you're able to fully express yourself and express your opinion. So this is great. And I heard you on with Gabe earlier this week, and that was awesome. The back and forth was great. But last night, you did the drive. You took the drive to Concord and De La Salle for that game against Clovis North. Obviously, we discussed it with Mitch Stevens. But, you know, from your perspective, you know, did it just seem like it was De La Salle's night, right? I mean, Clovis North had that great run throughout the whole season. They're the Central Section champs. And, you know, it just happened to be De La Salle's night that night.
It was weird, you know, because it was one of those things where, I mean, without doing a deep dive, I didn't do a deep dive into both schools. I didn't look at tons of game film, but I went in and looked at, you know, some of the max preps, you know, highlight videos of De La Salle to try to get an idea of what Clovis North was going to be seeing, and looking at the results from this year and the scores. I mean, I think all of us thought this is going to be a pretty competitive football game, and yeah. this is probably as good a chance as a team like Clovis North has of knocking off somebody like De La Salle in a long time. And I don't think we were incorrect in that assessment. I just think when you see it in person and when you have a motivated De La Salle program in an environment like that, I think they were ready to play. You know, they were fired up for a game like that. And usually De La Salle against a Clovis North at home over the years, right, that's going to be a game that maybe – They're not fully 100% focused all week long, right? I mean, they're going to go out and they're going to try to play their best football game, but maybe they're thinking, hey, we're a big favorite in this game, and they kind of relax a little bit, right? I don't think that was the case, because I think they had a little chip on their shoulder for that game last night. And then in talking a little bit with their head coach after the game, you know, he mentioned that Clovis North had not really faced a downhill rushing attack all year long. At least I can't think of one off the top of my head. Maybe you can. But, you know, those track teams, right? Most of the track teams, the Centrals, the Clovis West, the Clovis East even now,
sure.
spread attacks, right? Yeah. And they're going to try to throw it all over the field. And so suddenly you have a veer option attack with two outstanding running backs and a very athletic quarterback after watching him in person, who I think is a little bit underrated just because he never really gets to throw the football. But yeah. he is very athletic. And they were just – it was a quickness to their running game, Paul, that kind of struck me, that it was like before Clovis North could even react, they were 3 yards downfield. And so I kind of kept tweeting. It was kind of reminding me of what Mountain West teams sometimes struggle to stop Air Force when they get rolling. Because, yeah. yes, you may have the occasional play, but even when you make a good defensive play, it's still a 2 yard gain.
And sometimes you think a good defensive play is holding them to 3 yards and then holding them to 2 yards. All of a sudden it's 3rd and 5, and yet they still get it. That's very, very frustrating for defenses.
Or they pick up 3 yards on 3rd and 5. But guess what?
Yeah,
it's a four down game when you have a veer option attack with that kind of, just again, it's a quickness off the ball. It's a quick little trap plays quickly, you know, and then suddenly when you're, you know, you crowd the middle, maybe you crowd the box, suddenly that quarterback who's very athletic, you know, keeps it and he's around the edge, you know, yeah. and then suddenly when they throw for the first time, you know, you're in trouble
yeah.
usually. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it was just kind of like a little bit of a kind of a shock and awe campaign. Right. And before you know it, Clovis North is down 2 scores like yeah. in the blink of an eye. And then suddenly the mistakes started happening, right? They had a 3rd and 3, I think it was, where there was room on a run for Jackson Sinfell, and he bobbles the exchange, yeah. right? And then they have the fumble by Chavez. And then before you know it, I mean, Clovis North's not the type of team that can come back from a big deficit. And so it was kind of lights out at that point.
It was. And all season, you know, we broadcast the games, the keys to victory for other teams against Clovis North was, you know, get them in 3rd and long situations. They're not going to turn the ball over and all those things, right? Didn't work out for Clovis North in that one. I want to ask more about the ambiance around the stadium, the fan support on both sides. I think there – yeah, Gabe retweeted a picture that showed 0 student section for Clovis – for De La Salle. You know, Clovis North brought a ton of people. So what did you see around the stadium?
There were some students from De La Salle who ended up filling in that area. There were cheerleaders over there, and there was a little a band as well over. So there was ambiance there for De La Salle. I mean, that was before the game began. And the Clovis North cheerleaders, the band, the fans, they were all in their seats in the house a good 20 minutes before kickoff,
yeah.
right? And so, you know, when you're the home team, that crowd sometimes is going to arrive a little bit later. So their side was pretty full as well. Now, it's a small Stadium, right? It's very reminiscent of Memorial. I mean, it's so funny how analogous those two are as far as being private schools. They're kind of tucked right in the heart of like an urban landscape, and that's where, like, De La Salle, the visiting sideline. Literally, you go over the fence, and there's the road, right? There's a pretty big, you know, thoroughfare of a lane there, and so the ambiance was cool. Clovis North was clearly, you know, ready to go with their supporters, and they had good support there. But De La Salle was supported as well. I don't want to minimize that. And there was it felt like a big game because you had kind of everybody, you know, you had the band there for Clovis North on one, you know, behind one end zone. So it kind of felt like that situation where it's kind of a little claustrophobic, and everybody's. There's so many people on the sideline, right? Media and you know, whoever it is, you know, dignitaries. Brent Brennan, the San Jose State head coach, was on the De La Salle sideline early in the game. I'm sure maybe he was looking at a few Clovis North guys as well. But it was a good ambiance for a game. And those pictures were a little bit, you know, like misleading, but not completely. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, Clovis North had just as many supporters there probably as De La Salle did.
Wow, that's awesome. It's great to hear. Talking with Scott Bemis right now. All right, let's flip a little bit. Let's talk about Fresno State. So we hit with the bombshell. You know, when I saw the Coach Tedford on Twitter that was had to step away. At first, a lot of people thought, "Oh, he's stepping down. Who's gonna take over? Who's, you know, gonna have a national search for a coach?" But that's not the case. Just stepping down for this. For the at least the bowl game, Coach Tim Skipper is going to be coaching. What was the response? Like, what were you guys thinking initially? What was your guys' thoughts right away with that?
I think we all had kind of the same gut reaction. Yeah, that and the first thought is with Coach Tedford, and it's something that's kind of always been in the back of my mind, and I'm sure with you as well. You know about. You know, medical issues and things like that, and how health is just so, you know, at the forefront of everything. And, you know, my dad, you know, my late father went through some heart issues, and it just never goes away, you know, and that's the hard part about it. And I don't know, I have no knowledge of what this latest issue is with Coach Tedford. I hope it's nothing super serious, that maybe it's, you know, something that they just caught. Maybe he has to have a minor procedure with his heart, although it's anything really ever that minor when it comes to the heart. If it is the heart, I don't want to make any assumptions about it. But a first thought goes to Coach Tedford's health, you know, going forward. The next thought is, okay, you know, does this mean that is he coaching again or not? And we got the answer on that at least at this point, I think, my guess is he probably thinks that he's going to be back on the sidelines coaching. But then the third thought is you have to be realistic about this, right? If you're Fresno State and if you're head coach Jeff Tedford, and I'm sure he is as well, you have to start thinking about the future beyond Coach Tedford, right? And so maybe, you know, we get a little glimpse as to what the university is thinking, perhaps, right? Not that Tim Skipper necessarily is going to be the guy, right? I mean, they're going to clearly explore all the options, but it's clear that Tim Skipper is somebody in the back of their mind. They have an idea of, I mean, he's the assistant head coach, even when Coach Tedford's there, right? You know, it's not one of the coordinators, you know, it's not John Baxter or whatever, it's Tim Skipper. And so, you know, I think you have to start thinking about the future beyond Coach Tedford. Doesn't mean that Coach Tedford might not be back, but even when Coach Tedford was hired for the second time or retook the job, that thought occurred to me even then, that heart issues are heart issues and they never really go away. Yeah. And so I'm excited that Coach Tedford is back, but the university has to be thinking kind of long term and maybe about the next step after that as well.
And Coach Tedford loves Fresno State, right? And I think he would always do what's in the best interest of the program, right? The program is, you know, it's huge in the lives of a lot of people. And I think Coach Tedford obviously would make a choice, you know, for his family and for his future. But, you know, the Fresno State program means a lot to him.
There's no doubt about it. And even if there's a time in the future, you know, whether that's 2 months from now, whether that's 3 years from now, hey, 5 years from now. I mean, I'm not counting out Jeff Tedford. He loves to coach. And sometimes having something in your life that you're passionate about, I've never been through something like that. But just knowing, you know, again, using my dad as an example, you know, just – the effort to play golf on a regular basis, to get out with his buddies, you know. And for Coach Tedford, he's a football guy, right? He lives and breathes football. And so, you know, maybe being a head football coach will provide some kind of inspirational lift for him and just a way that he can kind of keep forging forward, right, with his health. But if that doesn't happen to be the case, then, yes, you know, the football program needs to start thinking. I guess that's the best way. Just start thinking about the future beyond Coach Tepper.
So, 3-game losing streak, right? Everybody knows about that, and it's been difficult to watch at times for everybody. You know, the Valley loves their Bulldogs, and, you know, I'm a season ticket holder myself. I become a fan. So I sit and cheer for the Bulldogs. I really enjoy that time. But if I would have told you at the beginning of the year the Fresno State would be 8-4, right, and we, you know, playing in their bowl game, right, like, what would you have said? Would you have been surprised by that?
No, I wouldn't have. In fact, I would have thought that's about where I predicted them to become. In fact, I think when I was talking with Paul Leffler over the summer, I kind of, in asking him a question, said, okay, make it 8.5 wins. Are you going over or under?
So that's, you said it at 8.
That was kind of the assessment that I had, right, of this team. Now, the hard part about that, right, Paul, is there are 8-win seasons that are looked as great seasons. You know, if you're a team – trying to think of somebody right now. Hey, New Mexico right now, right? If they went out and won 8 games next year, it would be unbelievable, right? And there'd be a tremendous amount of energy on the program. But then there's 8-win seasons that just end with a thud, like this year did. And unfortunately, it doesn't completely take away what this football team did. They're still playing in a bowl game. You know, 10 years down the road, it'll be an 8-win season or a 9-win season if they happen to win their bowl game in the record books. But it leaves just a little bit of a sour taste in your mouth. And sometimes you're the victim of your own expectation, right?
Yeah.
Coach Tedford has set a standard now at Fresno State that makes an 8-win season, in this sense, be a little disappointing, right? And so I still think in the grand scheme of things, it's a good season. It's not a great season. But the way that it ended opened up some can of worms. It opened up some serious questions about things, right? You know, because it wasn't just that they lost, Paul. It was the way they lost those last 3 games.
Yeah, that San Jose State game, you know, that was hard. It was hard. And, you know, you talk about a team that dominated in all facets of the game. That was San Jose State in that one. What would be the biggest needs then for Fresno State moving forward? You know, the running back situation, you know, Sherrod showed, you know, bursts and times. I mean, that kickoff return is something we're going to remember. That's probably the standout play that we'll remember in this season. You know, running back situation. Quarterback situation, obviously Keane's coming back, Fife's in the portal. Receivers a little bit question mark as well, but what do you think the biggest needs are for Fresno State next season?
That's an interesting question, because when you look at the all-conference teams, I thought that was pretty telling, right? it was kind of telling about that there wasn't really somebody who just jumped off the page this year, you know, for Fresno State on either side of the ball, right? So they had some really good players. I'm not trying to discount the Malik Sherrods of the world, you know, or the Lavelle Baileys of the world, you know, who made some huge plays for this Fresno State football
team. I thought he should have been first team. Come on.
I agree with that assessment. I agree with that assessment. But that also tells you a little something too, Paul, when the other coaches look at it, despite 3 game-changing plays, you know, basically walk-off plays by Lavelle Bailey, the other coaches, you know, or didn't vote him.
Yeah.
Is it voted by the coach? I'm assuming
I believe so. Yeah.
I think it is voted by the coaches. Didn't vote him a first-teamer, right? And so that's interesting to me. That's just kind of interesting about the perception, right? And I love Lavelle, and he's a gamer, and he's a Bulldog through and through, and I think he deserved to be on the first team as well, just for making those plays. You got to make plays in the end, and he did, right? But by the end of the year, like, I went back – because I was curious, you know, I didn't get a chance to watch every play of the San Diego State game. I was working at the time. I mean, I had it on, but I was kind of, you know, doing multitasking at that time. And I went back and I wanted to see kind of play by play, you know, look at it a few times, you know, especially defensively and see what happened. And you know, I'm not a coach, so I can't tell you, hey, this was, you know, schemed out this way or that way. It just seemed to me that Fresno State was kind of not getting moved off the ball a little bit. And they weren't getting off any blocks at any point, right? And they were kind of in a containment mode, you know, in that game. And I think that was true also in the San Jose State game to a degree and also in the New Mexico game. And, you know, when a team just runs downhill on you like San Jose State and New Mexico did and you can't stop it, you know, you have to look yourself in the mirror a little bit at that point and think, okay, what's the scheme? What are we doing? You know, I'm not saying that, you know, we need wholesale changes or anything, but they need to take a look at things and figure things out. And I also think that they didn't really have a game-changing player on defense this year. They had some really good players, like I'm talking about, but they didn't have some game changers, and they had some cluster injuries on the defensive line, which really hurts when you're a Group of Five program, but that doesn't explain it all away. So defensive line obviously is an area where, you know, whether they need to go get some fresh bodies or just look at what they're doing with the current bodies that are there, you know, that area needs to be upgraded one way or another, right? And then they're going to have some issues, like at linebacker, right? I mean, you got a lot of guys graduating from there, and they're going to have, you know, a corner in Carlton Johnson who's graduating as well. And, you know, I'm not sure what Cam Lockridge's, you know, situation is at this point, coming back from injury or as far as whether he'll be back. And so defensively, you know, they have some work to do, you know, on that side of the ball. And I think whatever they can do to try to kind of address those needs would be great.
Yeah, I agree. Defensive, offensive line. I mean, talk to Coach Hill, right? Broadcast games with him. Obviously, I listen to him on the radio as well. Defensive O-lines, they win you a lot of football games. They win you a lot of football games. All right. I want to ask you about NIL. You know, a lot of talk about it. Is it the wild, wild west? Is it out of control? Is legislation going to step in? You know, where's the money coming from Fresno State? You know, talk about, you know, I listen to national radio shows as well. They're paying out millions of dollars for linemen now, right? And I don't think Fresno State's doing that. So NIL at the Fresno State level, you know, where do you think we're at with that?
Well, at the Fresno State level, it's interesting because it's hard, right, for a Group of Five programs, right? So, you know, we're looking at the transfer portal right now, and you hear Matt Rhule, you know, talk about that it's going to take $1 or $2 million to attract a top flight quarterback, you know, to your school in NIL money.
And he just said it like it is. It's the elephant in the room, but he just says it.
And he said there's guys on rosters who are making $5 to $7 million a year, and you know, it's funny because we've grown up in a world, right, where college athletics were about scholarships, right, and kind of playing for your school and this and
correct.
That. Yeah. I don't have any issue with that whatsoever, with players making that kind of money. It's a free market society. There's tons of money in college football. And so I champion that players are making money. I think they deserve it. If that's the kind of money that's being derived from the product they're putting on the field and somebody is willing to pay you that amount of money, I have nothing against that whatsoever. Now, having said that, it does create a world where it's very difficult for the Fresno States of the world to compete for the top flight talent, right? Because they're going to have to kind of be creative in who they go after. I mean, you know, I think Mikey Keene is a good example of that. And, you know, from everything I've heard and you know, the whispers and everything, I think he's making some NIL money, right? I mean, he's got the Fresno First Bank commercials and this and that. And I'm sure there's something Bulldog Bread, you know, has been launched. And so Fresno State's doing what they can to kind of get in that space. But Mikey's the kind of guy that I think Fresno State has to be kind of creative with. He's a good example of that, right? Because he's a guy that is not like a 4 or 5 star guy coming out of high school. He fits kind of the Tedford system, the mold of a Tedford quarterback, a little undersized, a little bit under the radar. And, you know, we'll see what Mikey can become. We'll see if he ends up being the guy for the next 3 years or if they transition somewhere else. I mean, I think that story's still to be told. I think he did a lot of good things this year. There were some struggles for a little bit, but also his health was an issue. And a big issue going forward is, can he stay healthy, right, you know, because of his size and everything else. But for Fresno State, they're going to have to continue to be creative. And I think – from a community standpoint, you know, we say this all the time, but people think it's just the football program. And the football program, it's all the coaches, it's all on just performing on the field and, hey, why can't you get these guys or why can't you do that? Well, you know, if you're a big name guy, right, and you can go to Alabama and make $2 million a year or come to Fresno State and, you know, make, I don't know, whatever it is, maybe high five figures or something like, I don't know. I'm just guessing, you know, where would you go, right?
And I think with our Central Valley kids, you know, you hear about why can't all these kids stay home? We're seeing a huge influx of Central Section kids that are staying at Fresno State. You know, I think about Kajabi and Stute and Marshall Sanders from Clovis West all sticking around. There's some other guys too. But, you know, I think about the huge 4 or 5 star guys that have come out of the Central Valley recently. You know, think of Adrian Martinez. You know, think of Caleb Kelly and all the, you know, Caleb Kelly could have gone anywhere, right? It was between Notre Dame and, you know, Alabama, and then Kendall Milton recently. Obviously, Kendall's getting some NIL money, right? Kendall's in it, right? And, you know, I need to mention him. I can't wait for a 1 o'clock game. I mean, Alabama, Georgia is going to be a great game. But it's a different animal within the last couple years. But like you just said, you're all for it. Open market, free. Get what you can get. But now we're seeing a little bit of the ugly side with the transfer portal and the identity thing, you know, with identifying with the college, right? And, you know, Caleb Williams even. So, you know, but however, I see college football still at the forefront of everyone's conversation. We're going to be watching games over, you know, last night and then today. The stands are going to be filled, right? The people are committed to a program. And so when you see all these guys change schools, it's still the identity of the programs that remain the same, right?
Yes. You know, I do think you're right that there is an issue that's kind of coming to the forefront here long term, right? And I don't think we've seen it yet, have that impact because we're still early in the NIL transfer portal world. Yeah. But there is an issue of long term, right? Is it so, you know, arranged around this free agency concept and guys moving schools so often that is there going to be a disconnect that ultimately exists between the fan base and your school? Like, you used to just root for your school.
Correct.
And there was a new crew of guys that came in as freshmen, but there were guys that were in the program for 3 or 4 years.
And you got to know them. You got to love them. I mean, the Lorenzo Neal, I'm just throwing guys, you know, the Derek Carrs and the Carrs, right? You just grow to Devontae Adams. Like, we count them as our own. We feel like they're a part of our family, right?
I agree, although I would also say this. Free agency's been around in the NFL for a long time now, right?
Yeah.
Has it affect those fan bases and how they root for their – if you're a Chiefs fan, you're a Chiefs fan, right? You know, I mean, there's some fan bases that maybe get a little more frustrated, but those are usually the ones that are losing, right?
Yeah.
You know, so if you put the wins together, it usually solves and fixes everything. But there could be a little bit of a disconnect that ultimately exists. I think in the grand scheme of things – that difference between the have and the have-nots is going to get magnified. And so if you're a Fresno State fan, it's tough, but you're going to kind of have to be okay with just trying to be the best in your peer group, right? You know, maybe magically if you have that one transcendent guy, you know, for a year at the quarterback position or something like that, maybe you could, you know, be in the mix with the big boys, you know, for at least have a chance, you know. But the truth is, it's going to get harder and harder, you know, to go in and have a chance to upset a USC, you know, or upset a team from a Power 5 conference, one of the real big boys, right, you know. And so you kind of have to kind of come to grips with the fact that it's okay. It's also okay for us to be the best of the rest, you know. And I don't mean to put it that way, but that, you know, even if there's some day where, you know, Fresno State is in a Group of Five conference and gets kind of separated, you know, from the NCAA.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be in Idaho, right? Like, covering sports in Eastern Idaho, and the Idaho Vandals were trying to be at the top level of college football. And after a while, people started to say, why are we doing this? Right? You know, it's costing us tons of money, right? We're not beating anybody. Why don't we just go back down to the FCS level and play our traditional rivals like Montana, Montana State, Idaho State, you know, and be better and maybe be good in that conference. And they did, and they were okay with it. Now, I think Fresno State's a little bit different. Obviously, they have way more tradition than the University of Idaho has when it comes to a football program. And Fresno State should expect to be good compared to their peer groups. But I think – and I don't think people think this. I don't think people expect to be, you know, in the top 10 every year. They just want to compete for the conference title and this and that. But I think you're going to have to become more comfortable with that even going forward.
No, I agree. And I know we enjoy kicking UCLA's butt. How about that, right?
Well, it doesn't mean you can't beat somebody every now and then. That's for sure.
Absolutely. So, Scott, we got one more question here. So let's wrap it up with some high school final thoughts about high school football. You know, I know you enjoy going out and watching the Friday night lights and going to different stadiums. So in about a minute or so, how can you just wrap up the great football season that we had? Obviously, we got some state playoff games. We got some teams still in it, but, you know, the Central Section titles are all wrapped up. But, I mean, how do you quantify how great it is here in the Central Valley?
Well, I have personal experience being in three separate markets and in Southern California, you know, growing up in Southern California, and then covering sports in Eastern Idaho, covering sports in Las Vegas, and covering sports in the Central Valley. And there's obviously small towns that kind of in Idaho that have a certain feel as small towns here in the Central Valley. But this place cares about high school football more than those other markets did, and I really appreciate the passion that exists for high school football in this area, especially in those small towns, right? And the type of athletes that come out of you know, this area is tremendous. It's tremendous. You know, the amount of athletes that get produced, you know, from Clovis Unified every year, you know, is fantastic, and we should celebrate that every single year. Sure, you're gonna have your, you know, disappointments that you want to be able to go in and compete with a De La Salle, but that's okay. You know what? Celebrate the fact that you went 13-0, you know, and that you won a Central Section championship. It's gonna take a few days, you know, to get that bad taste out of your mouth, but that was a fantastic season for Clovis North, and Clovis North, you know, probably with the guys they have coming back, is going to be fantastic. But what really I think is great about high school sports in this area, the big schools, we love watching them. We love the big-time athletes come out of it. But when you go to a town like Strathmore, like I did, you know, earlier this week, and you talk to a head coach like Jeremy Blackwell, and if you've ever been to a big-time game at Strathmore and just seeing the environment there, how the whole town literally comes out. I talked about the field kind of being enveloped at De La Salle. That's usually like media and other personnel. At Strathmore, it's because the whole community basically just kind of envelops the field with chairs and this and that. And it just kind of really puts in perspective what sports means to a community, to a town, to an area. And, you know, that's what's the beautiful thing about sports. And sometimes we get so caught up in all the negatives and this and that, you know, we forget about what sports is doing. And it's giving, you know, 30 to 40 kids at Strathmore, you know, memories that will last an absolute lifetime. And whether they win or lose tonight, you know, in their regional playoff game, those memories have already been established. And forever going forward, they will be known as the football team that won that Central Section title, or maybe more. We'll find out, you know, here tonight.
And they do have a state title, talking about Strathmore. But Scott,
and that goes for other schools as well, not
obviously,
just Strathmore.
We got Mission Oak and we got CVC playing tonight. And obviously Wasco won their game. They're going to be playing the state championship already. But Scott, always great to catch up to you. Got a great perspective. Have a great rest of the week, my friend. And Merry Christmas coming up.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Paul. And, you know, anytime. I appreciate you having me on. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, coming up after a break, we'll be talking with Gabe Camarillo about high school sports and more on 1430 ESPN. Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters. Follow me on the Twitter sphere, the X, whatever you want to call it these days, at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors. All right, we're at the time of the year. I know I mentioned Merry Christmas coming up, but yeah, I mean, we're in December, right? So tons of Christmas decorations are going up everywhere. My daughter is actually at the downtown Fresno parade, which is really, really cool right now. Talked to Kenny Palinelli, his family. They get their Christmas stuff up before Thanksgiving. I remember seeing that stuff in the past. I'm like, man, that's taboo. You got to wait till at least Thanksgiving to put up Christmas stuff. But anyway, we're in the month of December, a little bit of a transition going from football to basketball. Always excited for basketball season. You know, we got some really good teams here in the Central Section. You know, we're going to be talking about those teams moving forward. We're broadcasting games with my guy, Gabe Camarillo. You know him from Home Field Advantage. 3 to 5, I love doing games with Gabe this entire season, with the pregame, the halftime, the post-game show, chopping it up. I kind of missed doing a game last night. I'm going to keep it real with that. But Gabe's joining me right now. Gabe, how's it going, man? Was it kind of weird not going to a game last night, or was it kind of refreshing, so to speak?
Well, can I say both? Because, it's nice to have a Friday to watch my sister play for the Edison High School JV girls basketball team. They won, by the way. And
yay.
The way I would describe my sister's game, she's a freshman at Edison. She's kind of like Charles Barkley with the rebounding and the post scoring. But she definitely, I wouldn't say, has the round amount of rebound type of thing that Charles Barkley had going on.
Well, what about her elbows, man? Sharpen up those elbows, becoming an enforcer, right?
Yeah. You know, that's funny. Like I asked her, how do you feel about being more aggressive? How do you feel about, you know, scoring more? And I think it's kind of her nature to pass it, you know, pass it to someone else and try and help others out, which is totally awesome in basketball. But when you got a team full of passers and not enough scorers, well, then someone has to step up, right? And then I took her to the Clovis West game last night to show her what top level girls basketball looks like. And I was like, look at number 0, Athena Tomlinson. Look how aggressive she is. And look at, she's aggressive, but also able to facilitate and get others open shots. And you know what she told me? She told me, Gabe, number 0 is a really good basketball player. And I told her, yeah, that's why she's going to Boston College.
And thousands upon thousands and thousands of games and travel and personal trainers and all that stuff that makes really good athletes for sure. Yeah, good stuff, Gabe. Hey, let's might as well talk about high school basketball. I definitely want to talk about Fresno State football a little bit and wrap up high school football. But yeah, let's transition to basketball. Full force, right? Next week's the Clovis West Boys Tournament that I love. Pool play going on in that one. But just an incredible 3 days of girls basketball at Clovis West. We got Shaq's daughter that, you know, she is obviously extremely, extremely talented. She stands tall, 6'4". It was funny, Gabe, I left a little bit early, during the Clovis and the Oak Ridge game last night. And I saw Shaq's daughter. I forget her first name, actually, but she was taking all kinds of pictures with fans. I mean, people wanted pictures with her and taking selfies. It was pretty cool to see.
It's awesome to have someone of that notable fame come to Fresno, because how often does that happen? Like, last year we had LeBron's son come, yeah. and there was this whole hoopla that LeBron was going to be in the building, which I don't know how true that ever was, but LeBron's son was here, and that was pretty cool, and Bronny played really well against Memorial. And what we did see of her, you and I both watched them face Clovis High School. She, I think, did enough to get them to win. It also was the fact that Clovis High embarked on this bold plan of just shooting threes, right? Because they knew that if you're going up against a 6'4" daughter of a NBA Hall of Fame center, you're not going to be able to score maybe inside the paint. So they went for those threes. Clovis High did, and they came up a bit short. I think they were like two threes away from tying the game, lost 42-36. But how about that? You know, the ability for Craig Campbell to get Episcopal from Houston, Texas, or the defending open division state champions from Arizona, Desert Vista, who I was really impressed with their effort last night. I watched them play Clovis West, and they were flying all over the place. They look like the Clovis West of their state, of Arizona, and the fact that the Golden Eagles were able to come back last night and have Episcopal also face Carruthers in a close game earlier before that, just great high school girls basketball, and it's still not over yet. There's a lot of games still to be played today at the Nest.
Yeah, there's some really good action tonight, and can't wait for next week as well. So, Gabe, can we say that we're going to broadcast games, or is it?
Yeah, well, we're for sure going to broadcast some games. Not sure yet which ones, but we will be at the Clovis West Nike Invitational.
Okay, so boy-wise, as far as basketball, Clovis West looking super strong, 5-0. They're playing down south right now. Hey, DJ Stickman's looking like he's improved by leaps and bounds. He's just shown flashes of being a great player for the last couple years, and this year looks like he's putting it all together. You add Jackson Young, and when Marshall Sanders returns to the team, is it going to be formal? I know they have a transfer, give them finally some height that they lacked last year. St. Joe's, we know what they return. Tunde looks as strong as ever. Somebody mentioned at the Heart of California Classic last week at the Save Mart Center, people are saying, like, I think we're looking at an NBA player in Tunde. And I know you recognize that really early too, Gabe, with him. Julius Price is a good, player returning for them. But, hey, this might be the year that Clovis West is able to get over the hump and beat St. Joe's.
All right, so if this was football, I would pick Clovis West because they have a deeper roster, right? They got Zach Schohan, who's rocking a cool mustache and also a really good basketball player, good rebounder, just a big guy almost. He plays like a big guy, as does Titus Kajavi and Chris Boudreau. So I think with those three, Clovis West definitely has the physicality to match up with the St. Joe's that doesn't have their former Marquette center, Caden Hamilton. Now he's at Marquette doing great things with Shaka Smart. But you still got the best two players in the section on one team, in my opinion, in a future Power 5 point guard in Julius Price and a future NBA player in Tunde Yesufu. And because they're playing basketball and not football, I don't think depth matters as much if you got the best two players on the court at all times. I'm curious to see how much rest Tom Mott gives Tunde and Julius during their Mountain League, because let's be honest, Paul, and all respect to all the Mountain League listeners out there, but you're not beating St. Joseph boys basketball this year. They're that good for a reason. Do they get a lot of rest in league play, knowing that they'll probably play a full 48 minutes throughout the playoffs? You're going to need to have Tunde and Julius on the floor at all times, because as long as they're on the floor, St. Joseph has the upper hand over anybody in our section, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Clovis North, they're playing Buller tonight. I wish I could, we say this quite often. I wish I could clone myself and go to about five different things tonight. Clovis North's a really good basketball team. Connor Amundsen is at full strength. Bakersfield Christian, they're an intriguing team. But I want to talk about Memorial a little bit. You know, obviously coming off of that state championship last year, they lost a couple really key players. A lot of question marks, right? I mean, is Julius ready to take over the main scoring role? How are those, you know, those kids that are going to get a lot of playing time, how are their roles are going to be increased? But I got to tell you, I know it was only one game, and I know they lost at the buzzer. But I was impressed. I liked what I saw with that Memorial squad.
I feel like they're the best matchup against St. Joseph, just like they were last year when they almost beat them in Santa Maria. They were 2 points short in that game, and I feel like they kind of lost the same type of stuff. Now, you talk about what St. Joseph lost in Caden Hamilton, who's at Marquette. Memorial lost that with Mike Davis Jr., a big presence inside who can, you know, affect shots in the paint, block shots in the paint, and on offense score in a variety of ways. I think Mike had a pretty good jumper, too, that not really many people saw, but can Dre Davis fill in that role? That's going to be the question for Memorial if they can continue from last year's state championship win. If Dre Davis can fill in the role of Mike Davis Jr. and be a physical presence on defense and be a bucket getter in the paint on offense, that's going to go really well with the shooting they have with Abram Potts and Parker Spees and Silas Rodriguez, some of these younger guys getting more time. Sajin Sudhu, also a good young shooter. But really, it's Julius's team right now. I think Julius has assumed the role as the number one guy. He fills in for Mike Davis Jr. last year and Joseph Hunter the year before that. I feel like this is Julius's team now almost. And if he gets really hot, the Memorial Panthers are really tough to beat. You saw their game against Linwood. How much did Julius score in that game?
Yeah, I think he had 28, and he had some clutch buckets late in that one. His mid-range game, easy for me to say. Yeah, looked really, really strong. So, hey, Gabe, I can't wait, man. The San Joaquin Memorial and Bullard matchups are suddenly very, very intriguing. Bullard's going to have a couple players eligible, I believe, the day after Christmas. So when league comes around, that's going to be must-see basketball. I want to wrap around here, Gabe, to high school football. Had conversation with Mitch Stevens and obviously Coach Palinelli from Madera, kind of a wrap up as well. I had a great time chopping up high school football with you in the pregame, halftime, and postgame, and obviously on our shows. But is there one moment to you that sticks out this year in high school football, whether it was a play on the field or talking to a coach or a player and knowing their situation? Is there something that really stands out to you this year in high school?
The Shafter Torres situation stands out the most because of how it grabbed the attention of everyone in the state of California, because there was almost an argument to be made that the CIF Central Section could do something they've never done before, which is 48 hours after the game's over, change who won the game because of an incorrect call. Now, I don't know how close it was to happening. It could have maybe never happened. It could have been the delusion of Shafter fans and football players and coaches that really hoped their season wouldn't end on a blown call. It kind of was also a lesson outside of high school football in a way, like the argument of morality. What's the right thing to do if you're Torres? What's the responsible thing to do if you're the official? Do you stay on the field and correct your mistake? Do you leave the field and leave it up to someone else's doing? And then you learn that no one else can change it except you. This was such an interesting argument, and you could have had a whole 2-hour show just about that situation alone. You know, the lead up to it, the fact that it mirrored exactly what happened the year before between those two teams, except this time Torres converted on the 2-point conversion, and it ended up with basically deciding, in my opinion, the Division IV championship. I know that was a semifinal, but I felt the winner of that game, either Shafter or Torres, would have beaten Dos Palos. And, of course, Torres beat Dos Palos 69-14. I think that moment stands out the most as maybe the most eye-opening and controversial of the high school football season.
Well, Gabe, you're leaving me with like 4 minutes to respond to something.
Go
like
ahead.
That.
And I've been waiting for so long to hear your thoughts on
this. I know you
this.
Have. I know you have. Yeah, it's an interesting situation. I think all three entities, so to speak, about Shafter and Torres and the CIF, were put in very difficult situations. It was just a no-fun situation that shouldn't have happened. Let's be honest. Shouldn't have happened on the field. That's just a blatant, blatant missed call. But what do you do afterwards? And, you know, I mean, there's lots of schools of thought. And, you know, I have talked to some people on the Torres site as well. And, you know, they did not want to give up the win. They, you know, they said, hey, we're that's our win. We're moving on. We're not looking back. There's a whole other side. So you think about Shafter and you think about, you know, what might it have done if things were done different on the Torres side? You know, could you concede the game? Is it, you know, it's a huge life lesson, and I, you know, my opinion, you know, it might change later, but I'm still pretty firm on the fact that I didn't believe that Torres deserved to win that game. Now on the field, it wasn't the right call. However, right in this age of, you know, of doing what's right and you know, pursuing victory with honor, those things, you know, how come Torres didn't go and say, you know what, as a blatant missed call, refs, are you guys still here? Again, they left the field. Let's get back together and let's make this right. So, I mean, this is going to be talked about for a long time, let's be honest. And, you know, it's something that hopefully change will come later in the face of adversity. Sometimes change happens, and change can be a good thing. So I'll just leave it at that. Again, Gabe, this could be another two-hour conversation. I do want to hit up. We got a couple minutes. So you wrote an article about Coach Tedford, and Scott Bemis and I talked about it a little bit, but you know, you're able to write an article for Barkboard. What was the gist of the article, and what are your feelings around the situation with Coach Tedford?
So this is a very scary situation, and I wanted to outline why it's scary for Jeff Tedford's health. There's a lot of people concerning themselves right now with creating a hot board of who the next Fresno State head coach is, or speculating, well, why is he doing it now in the middle of recruiting season? There's a lot of conversations happening about football, but what I want to make clear with this article is that it's more than football. Jeff Tedford is a football coach, but that's what he does. It's not who he is. You know, he coaches football, but in reality, he before he's a football coach, he's a husband, he's a father, he's a grandfather, he's a friend of many, he's the mentor to 111 Fresno State football players. So yeah, he is a football coach. That is his job, but that's not what he is as a person. He coaches football, but he lives life, and he has lived life, unfortunately, with health issues that in the past have related to the heart. I'm not sure what this current health issue is, and the exact words from athletic director Terry Toomey is that Jeff Tedford is addressing personal health concerns. That's the exact quote. But he is 62 years old, and he has had heart issues in 2014. That caused him to leave Tampa Bay, and in 2020, he had a surgery a month after he left the job in December of 2019, just trying to get rhythm back to his heart in a regular way. And that is scary to think about, heart rhythm being irregular. And Tedford mentioned it when he resigned slash retired in 2019, that there was an incident a few weeks prior where he had to get shocked back into rhythm and he wasn't feeling good. And he was scared by that too. So Tedford's, you know, admittedly been battling heart issues in the past, and that's nothing to joke with. That is nothing to joke around about and nothing to play with at all and nothing to overlook. So my article was really meant to reprioritize what needs to be on Fresno State fans' minds: the health of Jeff Tedford, who is facing something scary. You know it's scary if this is the third time in a decade that he stepped away from the game he loves and the job he loves for something more important, which is his health. There's a very few things more important to Jeff Tedford than Fresno State football, and this is one of them. His health and his family is one of them, so you know it's serious if he's willing to leave the team before they play a bowl game temporarily to address this stuff. And I unfortunately think a lot of fans they should be giving their thoughts and prayers to Tedford more than they currently are, because this is very scary to me.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, Gabe. Life is much more bigger than football or any sport for that matter. And, I mean, Coach Tedford is a legend. I mean, he's Pat Hill, Jim Sweeney. I mean, you think about Coach Tedford with a lot of the legends. So really quick, Gabe, I know we got a couple seconds here, but prediction, CVC and Simi Valley, what do you got?
CVC, I think I said on my show, 31-28, Donaldson does it again.
Donaldson does it again. I can't wait. I'm going to be there 6 o'clock, Central Valley Christian, Simi Valley. All right. Thanks to you, Gabe, as always. Thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, First String Sports, Jorge Rodriguez, Mitch Stevens, Kenny Palinelli, Scott Bemis. Next week, guys, listen up. I got Paul Leffler in the house for 2 segments. I can't wait for that interview. Have a good week, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.